Genesis chapter 1, beginning at verse 19, it says, "So the evening and the morning were the fourth day," and so we concluded that one. Now verse 20, "Then God said, 'Let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens.' So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, 'Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters of the sea, and let birds multiply on the earth.' So the evening and the morning were the fifth day." So it seems as if, that's very few words to cover a vast amount of creative enterprise for God. And that's one of the things that's going to be helpful. I hope it's helpful to slow down. You remember we looked at day three. He divides the waters from the dry land, and all the plants and the trees and the fruit and all of that that goes with it was created. Day four, it was space, the heavens, and all of that. And now we're back looking at the earth. And he creates on this day all of the creatures that fly and the creatures that are in the waters that swim. And obviously not every creature in the water swims. Some crawl around and walk around, and so different modes of locomotion, but all of that. So I just want to summarize. I want to just kind of just think our way through this, and then we'll get some application that could help us. We're going to talk first about the living creatures. We're going to really focus on verse 21, and in that verse, he talks about the sea creatures first and then the birds. So we're going to go look at it in that order. "So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves with which the waters abounded according to their kind." So on day five, God speaks into existence, and suddenly that word abounded just means full and bursting forth, just teeming, if you will, with life. Life below the surface. And I assume that, and I'm going to make some assumptions because God just kind of gives a broad brush approach to it, but I'm assuming that means all the creatures. You know, we have some that live in fresh water and some that live in salt water and all of that. So I assume it's all together. But think about the creative order. Now, this is current statistics. If you look at some of these, and let me go on and finish reading verse 21. "And every winged bird according to its kind, and God saw that it was good." So you have the birds as well. Of these two types of animals of creation, it is estimated, and by the way, even today, there's a lot of talk about species dying and becoming extinct, and that does appear to happen, and has in fact happened in our lifetime. But at the same time, there are new species discovered all the time. Not that they suddenly appeared, but we're just identifying them and finding them in remote locations and that sort of thing. But of the birds, it's estimated that there are 10,000 species of birds. When I looked that up when I was preparing this, I was kind of shocked at that number. That's an amazing variety of different kinds of birds. Now, you understand we have a system in our way of doing it, that we divide creatures. And I don't know if species exactly fits into any category that God has. God speaks more of their locomotion or their location, those things that creep on the earth or those things that fly in the heavens or those things that are in the waters and so forth. So, but that's our common designation. So I'm glad I don't have to categorize all those and name them, but could you imagine? And then imagine, of each of those 10,000 species, how many individual, creatures are there in each of those categories? Millions and millions and millions, incalculable. I don't know about you, but I don't know if it's more recently or I'm noticing more or their sound is irritating me more, so I notice them more. But I go out in our backyard in the trees. It seems like they're full of crows all the time. Do you have crows around your house? Or are they just all congregating in my neighborhood? I don't know where they're. It just seems like there's a lot more crows than there used to be. And if you have an explanation, you can share that with me later. But I don't know how many crows there are on the planet, but there's plenty of them around here. But multiply that by wherever, whatever the range of crows there are, and then all the different species of all the birds. God just says, boom, fill the skies with them, and there they are. Okay? When you think about other creatures, because God is not, you know, we would say a bat is a mammal and a bird is not a mammal in that sense. But he's talking about, all the things that fly, he creates in one time. God is not locked into our categories. So I looked this up. There's estimated to be 1,240 species of bats. And for some of you, it might be the opinion that that's about 1,200 too many. I don't know if you like bats or you're a friend of bats. Actually, they're very helpful. They're very helpful. We are told by people who know such things, if it weren't for bats, the insect population would not be kept in check and in control and so forth. So I find them fascinating creatures as long as they have a little bit of distance between me, because they kind of swoop in out of the dark. But I would assume you would add that to the list, all right? And then you talk about fish. This was an amazing number. All right, now this is all sea animals. This would be fish, this would be crustaceans, this would be, you understand, corals are actually animals, although it's hard when you see a coral to imagine that that's an animal, but it is an animal rather than a plant. But it's estimated that there are 230,000 different species of creatures in the ocean. And because the ocean is so big and parts of it are so deep, we are still, you know, as we get deeper and have equipment and that sort of thing, we continue to find new, fascinating creatures all of the time. Now, when it comes to birds and fish and the sea, I guess I'm going to reveal my age, but I was introduced to the creatures of the sea by Jacques Cousteau on television. Do you remember all those specials? You know, Jacques Cousteau is going to swim with the manta rays, and the Calypso is going to go off to the Galapagos Islands, and we're going to see, you know, whatever's swimming in the waters there and all that. And I remember as a kid just being fascinated by just the abundance and the variety and, frankly, the strangeness to us of what God has made. And there's some unbelievable things that God has made. If you want to look at one, just flip your page over on the back. I couldn't help but share with you a couple pictures. Those of you that are in our men's Bible study, you saw this picture a week or so ago because we were talking about about being puffed up. So I had the picture of the puffer fish there, but there's a puffer fish. And usually, if you look, you don't see many fins on it. It's not a good swimmer. So if it is threatened by a predator, it can't dart away like many fish. They just have speed to get away. So God gave it this unique ability that it has a stomach that's extremely elastic. That might be nice for us around holiday time, but we don't have stomachs that are quite that elastic. But basically, it starts swallowing water and taking it in, but not letting it out. And so it just kind of turns into a floating balloon full of water. And as it gets bigger, it looks more threatening. And then those little spines you see on it, usually they lay flat against its body, except when it puffs up. And then they start sticking out like quills on a porcupine. So when it's threatened, suddenly what looked like a tasty treat to some fish swimming around looks like, I don't think I'm going to mess with that. I don't think I want to get that in my mouth. And that's how it's protected. That's just one little fish in the ocean. But God made a variety of them, all right? Anyone want to guess what the bird is? I knew you wouldn't, because I didn't know what it was till just a little while ago. That is the magnificent frigate bird. Someone knew that, did you? You didn't know that? Well, this is found in the Galapagos Islands and some places around, you know, in that part of the world. But it has this feature that when it wants to call attention to itself, there's probably a sermon here. Okay, we could probably find a sermon illustration. I guess I was fascinated by things that blow up. Okay, but it can inflate this large part of its body. It's called a Gallier sac, and it just makes itself a lot more visible. It's kind of like waving a flag. And one of the ways that it wants to wave a flag and draw attention to itself is, and by the way, only the males have these, okay? But why was that funny? Well, it's when they want to attract a mate, is when they you know, like, here I am. And that's the way that works. But interesting in the bird, and you know this if you're a bird watcher, like you look at cardinals, a male and a female cardinal. The male is very colorful, and the female, because they're, you know, the female laying the eggs and everything, God gave them a little more protection. So the idea is the male would draw the predator away with the flashy collar, and the female would be able to be with the young and the eggs and so forth. So God knew what he was doing. I just found that. I just wanted to show you a picture, okay? So there's your picture. But just multiply that by time and time and time again of God, what God had made. And then the freshwater fish, it's interesting. There's not near the variety of freshwater fish as there is saltwater fish. And but that 700 species does not include non-fish, like, you know, crayfish and mussels and clams and freshwater shrimp and all that kind of stuff. So when God speaks into existence, there's a whole lot to that. Now, I'm going to share with you some lessons we're going to draw out of this at the end. So if you don't mind, we're just going to give you a bunch of data and think our way through this, and then we're going to talk about what we can learn from this, okay? There's, by the way, this also does not include the species that are now extinct. And there's been species that have gone extinct. One that is sort of interesting and sad at the same time. 150 years ago, there were certain places that the passenger pigeon was a particular species. They said that sometimes these flocks would fly over in the sky, it would almost grow dark. They were so thick with these birds. They were just massive amounts of these here in North America. And due to overhunting and loss of habitat, maybe some other factors, there are no passenger pigeons anymore. They're extinct. But when God created everything, so you have all of these types of animals and fish and all the creatures, how many more were there that we know because they're in the fossil record, or we have some historical record that once lived, it now doesn't? And how many once lived that we don't even know they once lived? We haven't found any record of them anywhere. So it's we don't really know what all that God made, but it's pretty spectacular, all right? Now, there's some things here that God has built in that you begin seeing now that we're talking about animals. And this is now going to apply the next 2 days, okay? Because day 5 that we're on, he makes the sea creatures, he makes the flying creatures. Day 6, he makes the land creatures, all right? And he also makes man on day 6. And this same sort of principle of blessing and having a purpose and multiplying after its kind fit in all of these categories, including us as humans. And you'll see that as we go forward. So it says in verse 22, and God blessed them. I mean, I just find that fascinating that after God made them and gave all of these creatures all this beauty and variety and all of the traits and characteristics, then God turns around and now he speaks a blessing to them. He wants to add blessing upon blessing. Probably that's a lesson we could file away for later as well. But here's what he says in his blessing in verse 22. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. There is this blessing and this command that he says that I want you to now be fruitful, and I want you to continue to fill the earth and replenish and just, you know, be everywhere and be part of this grand, original, totally integrated ecosystem that was in the original creation. And everything living in perfect balance and perfect harmony and everything just as it should be. All right? Now, we understand we are still fascinated by creation. And I assume you are animal lovers. We talked a while back about some of you live with animals, right? Some of you have animals living in your house, some little furry ones and maybe some little feathery ones and that sort of thing. Maybe you have some fish swimming in a tank or something. But we like animals. But you have to understand, in our world today, it's not real pretty. Our son Brandon, he got this for me. But he loves fish, and he has this beautiful saltwater tank in his house, in his basement, 60 gallons, and he's got all kind of coral, just beautiful, and it's amazing. Well, he always wanted to, this just recently, he wanted to add a starfish. Didn't that sound great? a starfish. That just sounds lovely to have a little starfish, you know, doing what starfish does. Well, a couple years ago for his birthday, we asked him, what can we get for your birthday? He said, I want you to buy me a clam. I'm not making this up. So we ordered him a saltwater living clam, and he's had this thing in his aquarium for probably 2-3 years, and it kind of opens up, and it's a beautiful thing. So, and by the way, they are not cheap, okay? It was like $50 for this clam. I mean, all right, next time you go to the seafood buffet, you know, it's a deal, okay? But this particular clam he wanted, and you know, so every time we'd go to his house, look, there's the clam, it's doing well. So he gets his starfish. Next day he gets up, the starfish killed the clam and ate it. And he was just like, ah! You know, but you don't want to kill the starfish because he killed the clam, because starfish are expensive too, you know, So he took the starfish out and put it in another tank, and, you know, he was just heartbroken. That's what things do in a fallen world, because things are out of balance and predator and prey and that sort. Starfish is doing what starfish do. I didn't know starfish did that, but if you got a clam, keep the starfish away, because they'll eat them. So, but in the original creation, there weren't things killing and eating, and it was different. Because remember, death does not enter the picture until man sins in Genesis chapter 3, and we'll look at that in a little more detail as we go a little further into the study. But in the original, it all works together. It's beautiful, and it has the ability to reproduce and to fill. And only God can bring that in, okay? I mean, we can't build machines that can reproduce themselves into other machines. Now, you can have some machines used to manufacture machines, but you know, it's not living. Life has that quality about it, and that's part of the blessing. And all was in balance and harmony. I just mentioned that. Now, I want you to look over, and this, we have to get ahead a little bit, just because we're going to talk about how mankind interacts with what we're seeing created here on day 5. And if you just slip down to verse 28, this is after man is created, and God says this to man. Then God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Same command given to the animals. Fill the earth and subdue it. Now look at this last part of 28. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air. That's what was created on day 5. And over every living thing that moves on the earth. That's what we'll look at next time, created on day 6. And God said, see, I've given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed. To you it shall be for food. So if you're a vegetarian, this was the original way, okay? If you're not a vegetarian, God changed everything later on, so it's okay, all right? So don't get too persnickety on that one. But in the original creation, there were not animals dying. There was not people dying. It's not until sin comes in. But God provided for them the food. But notice he says in verse 28, have dominion over. Verse 30 says this, also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and everything that creeps on the earth in which there's life, I have given every green herb for food. And it was so. That's the verse that tells me that there weren't starfish eating clams. Okay? It says God gave plant life for even the creatures of the earth. Now, I know that seems strange to us, because can you imagine a lion? You know, a lion's going to, you know, the poor little gazelle, you know, that gets, you know, separated from the herd, you know, they're going to eat it and devour it. But you know, it's interesting, as God talks in Isaiah about the lion, he says the day will come when he restores things to a uncursed position. He says the lion will eat straw like the cow. Now, that I know to us that sounds like, what? But it's part of what sin does and what the curse did, and God is going to undo that someday. So in its original creation, it was beautiful. It was in harmony. So here's our summary. Man was to rule over all, the highest of his creation. Man was supplied by the living things, especially the plants, obviously. But also, part of that dominion was to use animals for man's benefit. And that's why certain animals are able to be domesticated. And that's the reason we can have a nice glass of milk. and enjoy it, that we can make cheese and butter out of it, and we can do those sorts of things. We can ride horses and plow your fields with oxen in the olden days before we have, you know, the internal combustion engine and so forth. So the domestication of animals was for man's benefit. So if you have a little dog that crawls up on your lap and you pet it and you hug it, and if there's some of you that share your bed with it, that's your business. But that's a little line I don't want to cross in my world. But if you have an animal that you love, that's part of you're taking dominion over the creatures of the earth, and that's okay. If it works for you, that's all right. Okay. So we can interact with this creation and enjoy it for man's benefit. Okay. So that's part of the creation. And life is seen in three areas. And that's the way God sort of divides it up in his creative order. He talks about in the atmosphere, the air, you know, the birds flying around. So do we have any bird watcher people? Do you feed the birds? I do when I think to fill the feeder. And sometimes when I don't fill the feeder, they'll sit on it and look at it in the window at me like, they can't point with their wings, but if they could, their face is saying, "You get out here and fill this thing." I just love watching them and having them, you know, kind of near where you can observe them. But tap into that and enjoy what God has created, okay? And then they created the water creatures, and which is so the air, the water, and then the land we'll look at on day six. Now, usually, to make a good lesson, you kind of look for one central, this is the one thing I want to share with you based on all of these facts and all of these things. I'm going to do the exact opposite tonight, okay? If you flip your page over on the back, I'm going to give you a list of 14 lessons that I can learn, okay? And I'm not going to take much time for them, but I can't find just one. I'm just going to give you a list. Just some things to think about, and you can meditate on these at your leisure. But what do you gain from that? What can you take away from that? Well, number one, God has the imagination and wisdom to make all things work. I'm glad he designed how animals work and move. And you think about in the early 1900s, there was this great rush on to try to invent a heavier-than-air machine that would fly. And of course, we've all read the story of the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk and, you know, these two bicycle, mechanics put this thing together. And if you've ever been to Kitty Hawk, they have it measured out where it took off and where it landed. And you look at the distance, it's like, that's pretty unimpressive. It was like, what, 170-some feet or something on their first flight. But it was a milestone. But God just says, fly. And the air is full of flying creatures. You know, we do our best to kind of replicate and duplicate, and we as the creative ability and the knowledge we've possessed, we've done some amazing things. But we're still playing catch up with what God's mind can conceive and what he could do. Number two, God has the ability to make all things work. You know, and to be able to do, to be able to swim in the ocean, to be able to fly. To be able to hang upside down for whatever reason that bats hang upside down when they roost. I don't know. I'm sure there's some good reason for it, but they do. But God designs everything to work in harmony with it, with its purpose, all right? And then God has given compatibility to make all things work. They work together. I wish I had taped it. I really do. I would love to have had this video, but I watched this video several years ago. It was on, you know, the PBS show Nature. Maybe you've seen that. But it was talking about this one particular hummingbird in South America that it has a curved beak that almost is curved 90 degrees. Okay? Now you think most hummingbirds have a straight beak, all right? But this one is curved, and there's a particular flower in South America, I don't remember the name of it, but has a flower that has that same exact curvature in it. So this one hummingbird has one source of food, and this one flower has one source of pollination, which is the hummingbird. If the flowers all die, the hummingbirds are in trouble. The hummingbirds all die, this flower's in trouble. Now, of course, the nature show says, isn't this amazing adaptive, you know, survival, evolution, how this all just worked out in some big accident. No, I think God just wanted to say, let's just make this a perfect working arrangement between this flower and this hummingbird to make a beautiful thing. to make it work together. So what one person can look at and say, what an accident. What an amazing accident. You and I should look at and say, what an amazing God that makes this work together, okay? The ability for growth and multiplication, we've already talked about that. He has given us the responsibility to care for his work. So when you have to, I mowed my grass for the first time last week. About the first three times I mow my grass, I really enjoy it. I like the smell of the grass. I'm out, you know, it's starting to be spring. Get about July and August, somehow my enthusiasm starts to wane. And is anyone else with me on that? It's just kind of like, oh, you know, I can't keep up with it. And it's hot and it's humid. When you go out to mow your grass, that's part of you being responsible for your little patch of God's creation, okay? So I'm going to heighten that. Lawn mowing can be an act of worship. You are tending your, it'd probably keep your wife happy too. So, but this is it's part of tending. It's part of caring. If you do flowers or you do that sort of thing, enjoy it. That's part of what God built into the system for us to enjoy. If you've just paved your whole yard with concrete so you don't have to mess with that, you need to rethink that, okay? God has given provision for us to live. If you ate today, that's part of God's provision. And if you had a nice dinner on Sunday, God's provision, you understand that. God has given life, this living thing. Only God could make life. 9, God has left marks of his handiwork everywhere. Remember, we were in Psalm 19 last week. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Ah, oh, God is a master craftsman. And frankly, some of the animals you look at and some of the fish you see in the sea, you almost say, he must have a sense of humor too. I mean, have you ever seen a duck-billed platypus? It's like, let's make a little of this and a little of that and a little of this and just kind of put it in one animal just to kind of freak everybody out so they don't know what to do with this. You know, here's a mammal that lays eggs. It's got a bill like a duck. It's got flippers like, you know, like a seal. You know, so, you know, he just seems to have some things thrown in to kind of mystify us. Number 10, God has left us with things to learn. Left us with things to learn. And part of that is this creation we live in. So you get a chance to go to a zoo somewhere, go and learn, all right? Learn about this amazing world that we live in. And also, he has reminded us that we have much to learn, lest we think we are smarter than we really are, lest we think we can get everything all figured out. Does anyone besides me have stink bugs that show up sometimes? Okay, am I not? Just please tell me I'm not the only one, okay? It's like they magically appear out of nowhere. I can't figure that, you know, you seal every crack and every, you know, it's like, and suddenly, stink bugs are smarter than I am. Because if I was smarter than they am, they wouldn't get into my house. But somehow they seem to somehow magically appear. Now, if you have figured out how to fix this, I want you to talk to me later, all right? Or if you don't have stink bugs in your neighborhood, I'll export some for you gladly if you would like to experiment. But, you know, it's just like every once in a while God just puts things in to say, you're not as smart as you think you are. You're not as, you know, we have to keep our place. We have to stay a little bit humble, all right? And for me, it's right now. Remember a few years ago when we had those ladybugs? I think that maybe is not as big a deal. Maybe it is where you live, you know, where they were swarming and all that sort of thing. So God always throws something as a wrinkle in the gear. God has shown us that variety is good. Remember Paul in 1 Corinthians, he's talking about, because they were all factious, and I've got a good gift, you've got a bad gift. My gift's better than your gift. And Paul says, listen, we're a body. It's like every part of our body is for our good, and, you know, and this part of the body helps that part of the body. It fits together. The body of Christ has great variety. If not, look around. Variety of gifts, variety of experiences, variety of liabilities and assets, we would say, but it all fits together to do. Variety is good. If we all could do one thing, there would be a lot of work not done. And there's things that many of you can do that I couldn't do, and there's something someone can do here and someone else can't do there, but it all gets done as we work together. So variety is good. I learned that from this text. Number 13, God has shown us that we are different than animals. This is important. I know I don't need to convince you of this, but it's an important distinction to understand. He made the fish, all the sea creatures. He made the flying creatures on day five. He made all the land animals beginning of day six. And then as a completely separate thing, in a different arrangement, different parameters, he makes man to show us that we are not animals. There's characteristics we share with animals, this ability to multiply and reproduce after our kind, etc., yes, but we are different and special. There's many people in the philosophies out there that are taught to us and brainwashed into us at times that just say, we're just mammals, we're just animals, that we're genetically very similar to chimpanzees. Well, I think chimpanzees are interesting, but there's a lot of difference between a chimpanzee and a person, okay? There's a whole lot of difference. And God made us special because we are the highest of his created order on this earth, leaving angels out of the equation at present, but we are special. Don't let anyone tell us, well, we're just another animal, the human animal. No. We are different and distinct, and you see that in this arrangement. We'll see it more when we get to the creation of man. And that's from number 14, which I was just talking about. God has shown us that we are the highest of his earthly creation. So that's not one lesson. There's 14 for you to meditate on and think on. But God has just taken the time to insert into the text of Scripture what should be the launching pad for a fascination, a curiosity, wonder that all leads back to the God who made it. I wrote an article several years ago, two or three years ago, a blog post actually. A friend of mine invited me to go on a photography day with him. So we went on this big, we were supposed to take pictures of wildflowers at a state park here in West Virginia. I think we saw like one dandelion, that was about it. We were told this was the place to go, read it in a book by the way, this is the place to go to see West Virginia wildflowers. This is the time to go. We had it all right, it wasn't a wildflower anywhere. But I just decided, Lord, I want you just, what can I gain? And I made a list similar to this and entitled it, What I Learned from a Walk in the Woods. You know, when you just get into that frame of mind, Lord, what can you impress me with? You know, and just start your mind freewheeling. I didn't get any good pictures that day, but it was a real worshipful experience just to be out and to see what God made. So enjoy that.